Welcome to episode 9 of Between the Swings. Thanks for joining us today, ladies and gentlemen. Today in episode 9, we're going to be talking about our transition from our winter grass to our summer grass and how it has been from an operational standpoint. We're going to be talking about some leadership learnings that we've had these past couple weeks as, again, golf course operators and managers and people. We're going to cap it off by talking a little bit about Pinehurst, some Between the Swings moments, Scottie Scheffler, and we'll kind of see where the wind takes us today. Hosted by yours truly, Alex Beaverson and Kyle Jones. Kyle, good to see you, my man.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing okay, man.
Yeah.
I'm doing okay. Summer is upon us. Heat is hot. and not is it just hot, it is extremely hot here in the state of Arizona, and it's been a wild start to our summer.
For those people that don't know, Arizona's hot, but Arizona is like on average 10 degrees hotter this year at this time than it was last year, right? We hit our first 110 degree day like a month earlier this year than last year.
Yeah.
And our golf course, is feeling it a little bit.
It is, right? So last June was one of the coldest Junes in historical record. And now this June, the last time that I looked, we had 4 or 5 days under 100 degrees.
Yeah.
And last year was probably the opposite, about 4 or 5 days over 100 degrees. So you can take every action plan or every piece of knowledge that you gained from prior year or prior experience and throw that out the window, because your grass is going to grow quite a bit different this year than last year. Similar pattern with the lack of rain, but with the early heat, it stresses the golf course and therefore stresses us a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So there's a lot to this question, but the general manager of a golf course and this golf course, how has transition been? How's it going? You know, from a managerial standpoint, you walk in every day, you have thoughts about the course. We drive the course. I've actually seen you drive the course more than I ever have.
Yeah.
Usually you're once a dayer.
Yeah.
And you're twice a day. You're out there. What's going through your mind?
It's making sure that our team is reacting appropriately, right? We talk all the time in understanding that when we're working in conjunction with Mother Nature, our course conditions today are only going to be a result of the decisions that we've been making over the last couple of days, or maybe, 7 to 10 days out, right? It's a result that you're seeing over a period of time, and it's not instant. And this is a time of year where you can be taking all of these actions, yet still see many areas on your golf course getting worse. And the challenge for us is we need to get the golf course to the conditions that we find acceptable, but also it's managed with what we're given from a grass growing conditions, right? What are the grass growing conditions like right now? And with it being so hot and not receiving any humidity until like the 23rd or 24th of June, we just last night on the 24th of June got our first raindrops of the summer on the golf course, but it wasn't measurable, right? So how we're trying to react is something that I want to be on top of as much as I possibly can. So right now it's an early morning setup, because when it's 110 degrees outside and the price is relatively inexpensive, the course conditions are transitioning from a winter ryegrass to a summer Bermuda grass, it's not the premier golf experience that it would be in February or March.
Right.
So it's very important that we are executing on the areas that we can touch and the attention to detail items that we can knock out of the park, right? So a lot of it is checking on tee markers and the setup of those items in where we're asking our golfers to start and finish their round, getting eyes on all of that. And then by the end of the day, you and I are very hands-on in the moving and relocating of additional temporary sprinklers on the golf course to try and help with course conditions improvement as well. So that second visit is more going out to focus on sprinklers and moving those around. But it's a very hands-on approach to help our agronomy team get eyes on 194 acres when about 50% of it is going through some kind of drastic change.
Yeah.
So I'm going out there for two reasons. One is, how can I help my team communicate current expectations to the golfer that's joining us today? And then how can I follow up and make sure that I'm applying the right amount of pressure with the people on property to ensure that we are elevating the golf course to the best of our abilities, right? But what we're given, or what we've decided to operate on in the month of June, in the budgets we've created, man, it's wildly different. Wildly. than the busy time of the year, yeah. Right? Quarter one, maybe even into quarter two, and late quarter four as well. It's a much different time of the year.
Yeah.
And as a leader and manager, I have to very quickly drop my expectations and understand that our potential for who we're supposed to be performing at, or the level that our facility is supposed to be performing at in June, July, and August, it is different than January, February, and March. And to me, what that means is the number of people that we're getting on property, the amount of dollars that we're able to find financial success in, that changes quite a bit this time of the year.
Yeah.
So to also be dealing with these weather patterns that are so unique and grass growing conditions that aren't where we want them to be, you find yourself asking a lot of questions and really trying to manage, at least me as an individual, manage my own feelings and emotions to ensure that I'm not just trying to apply pressure to get my business to the potential that I see it where it could be.
Yeah.
And instead, love my business for where it's at in the month of June, and know that it's still successful in the month of June. We're still putting, you know, the rounds of golf out there that we're supposed to be putting, but you sit in this role and feel like you could be doing so much more and so much different. But when you leave at the end of the day, you realize you have expended all of your energy.
Yes.
You have fought the battles that you've needed to fight. And just because you're not performing at 270 to 300 rounds of golf a day, you're still connecting with the community in the way that you need to be. And you're still responding to Mother Nature's ever-changing desires and or threats when it comes to how our grass is going to grow.
Yeah, it's an interesting season, because one thing I admire about you, KJ, as a leader, is you go home and you think, man, something failed at work, that therefore I failed as a leader. And you take a lot of burden on your shoulders for the success of this organization. But therein lies a struggle when we're struggling. And not to say Super is struggling right now. We're struggling compared to March, compared to February. Our golf course looks different. You're driving the course. You're seeing a lot of stressed areas that are not getting tended to at the pace that they're not growing in at the pace we want them to. We live in a comparison culture, so it's easy to jump on Instagram and look how other golf courses are doing and see their highlight reel of success and think, man, but you take that on.
Yeah.
You know,
and to clarify or go deeper into that is, when you're driving around the golf course and see these areas that need improvement, I know what can be done to make those areas better.
Yeah.
It's just the lack of time and manpower and effort, right? If we could have 20 people on the agronomy team, then we'd be the golf course that we want to be, right? So it really takes the time to sit back and look at it and understand that you and your team are applying your energy appropriately.
Yeah.
But yeah, as an individual, I take it upon myself to think that the level of output that my team is performing at, it's likely a result of the relationship that I have with them.
Yeah.
Because I'm the one that's creating the expectations. I'm the one that's providing the support. And if my golf course to me looks visually, plays, and the golf ball is actually playing differently than it does the year before. You know, there are some days that I can leave the golf course and I feel like I might be underperforming.
Yeah.
Because my golf course, to me, as a golfer, as someone who knows what good and bad course conditions look like, I sit here thinking, man, I'm a better GM than I was last year. But my golf course doesn't necessarily look better this June than last June. So you have to fight a lot of those feelings as an individual. But to me, it's important that I ensure that the first area that I go to identify needing correction is the relationship that I have with that person.
That's right.
Instead of maybe what their failure might be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leading people in their current position instead of their potential position is a hard thing, both product wise, leading, because we all know our product can be better. Every business owner knows, you know, every day can be better, should be better. And your comparison from this June to last June and not having it be a reflection of your personal leadership success is tough. I think the telltale sign of a good leader is how they react under stress more so than how they react when everything's going well. And this has kind of been stressful. You know, it's been one of those seasons where you go, I know I'm better. I know our course can be better. How can I help get us there, but yet love us with where we are today?
Yeah.
But the current position versus, you know, potential position and that discrepancy, therein lies the leadership difficulty and relational difficulty of leading people and products.
Yeah. And you said something to me the other day that I am so thankful for, and I even told you how grateful I was for it, was you reminded me that in sitting so close to me, you can see that I am people over product.
Yeah.
But there are times that when people are far removed from the decisions that you're making or the stresses that you're going through, they might not feel that way.
Yeah.
They might feel like you're putting your product or maybe even the profit generated from that product over the people in your company. And so hearing that from you, it's so easy to take a step back and realize, hey, it's the month of June. It's supposed to be approaching the slowest time of the year, right? We're aware that we can go from 6,500 rounds to 2,400 rounds. And it's so much more about loving your team, loving your facility for the facility and team that they are in the month of June, and just trying to respond and react the best way that we possibly can.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that you and I talk about as leaders and trying to get our team to perform to the best of their ability is maybe one of my weaknesses is going right to the relationship that I have with my department heads or certain people on my team on why they might be performing that way.
Yeah.
But it's also so important to realize that that one relationship is just a number of relationships that they have in their life, mm-hmm. and they may be performing at their certain level because of something that you have absolutely no control over. And it's so much more about being there for that person and loving them and supporting them than trying to obsess over how you can be different.
Yes.
Don't try and just be different.
Yeah.
Just be you and be there for that person. And take a step back and let them breathe for a second. So I think that's kind of just a step back from the flip side of that coin.
Yeah.
If I were to go home and think that everything is on myself and the relationship that I have, I think you and I also do a good job of realizing, hey, we've got a team full of people where this is one in a million things that are going on in their lives. And it's okay to be at a point where you might not feel like you're going 4 for 4 with four home runs with all of your employees that day. But if you take a step back and look at your batting average over that year, you're still batting well over 300.
That's
and
so good.
And well on your way to success.
Yeah, that I think you said something to me the other day, like you felt like you have had the impatient pursuit of perfection.
Yeah.
And I said, and then I adjusting your behavior to go, that pursuit of perfection is always there. It needs to be patient and long suffering and expectant. But that we're in that gap, I mean, minding that gap between perfection or I guess potential versus current position. What's one way that you combat that gap? Meaning we're here. I know we can be here. I'm here. I know I can be here. How do you get over that? I mean, this past week, general manager Kyle, GM, sign your signature at the end of your email, general manager, you worked a shop shift. And I know that seems kind of like, oh, do general managers do that? They don't really. Mm-hmm. Let me be honest. General managers don't at any facility, really. I mean, they can get in. They kind of should know how to do everything, which you do. But what did that like moment bring to you? And you were like behind the counter, staff had gone home, you're checking in guests. Mm-hmm. What went on in your brain for that little moment?
Man, it was an inspiration. It was inspiration to remember where you come from, right? And in working that shift, the place that I went to mentally was thinking of who I was when I was working those shifts.
How many days did you used to close?
I would close 5 days a week for 7 to 9 years in a row.
Yeah.
Probably a total of 3 golf courses in various capacities and just man in the counter, checking people in day after day. But I went back to a place in time when Kyle dreamt of being the general manager that was able to make a difference.
Come on.
And I had a realization, if all I did as a general manager was sit and face the pressures and stresses mm-hmm. of every general manager before me, I'm just going to become the worst version of those general managers, yeah. right? I am going to be dehumanized by the same stresses, the same pressures that those humans faced mm-hmm. in their job yeah. that dehumanized them to me when I was in those roles. And I feel like that could very likely do the same thing to me as an individual, to a lot of the people that I lead. Mm-hmm. So I was able to sit there and close the shop and realize I feel like I am battling this constant, impatient pursuit of perfection because I know and I see the potential for what this facility and what this team can provide as an output. Mm-hmm. But to take a step back from the spreadsheets, to take a step back from where superstition is trying to be at the end of 2024
yeah.
and check in 160 golfers on a Saturday in June, you realize you are making an impact.
There it is.
And the difference between your potential and your current performance, it doesn't necessarily matter mm-hmm. because we're not expected to be at our top performance every single day of the year.
Yeah.
Our budget fluctuates for a reason.
Yeah.
And it was just this moment of reflection to realize we don't have to be moving full speed. We don't have to be at the potential that I or even other people potentially see this facility being at every single day. Because if you take a step back and you look at the progress over a period of time or the average level of performance over a period of time, I think that's what matters. And that's what, as a leader, you need to take a step back and look at. Whereas in the month of June, when we're going from March's 6,000 plus rounds of golf to June and July's 2,500 rounds of golf, that provides a lot more time to see the areas that you can improve at or the opportunity to get better in your business. But this is our time to just react with Mother Nature accordingly, make the golf course the best we possibly can, and get through this 110 degree weather. It's okay that we don't have 300 people on property a day. It's okay that we're not improving 10 areas in 10 different ways because we are reacting and responding at the pace that we should be in June. So no, it's so important to not let the current stresses and pressures of your position to cause you to forget about the person you wanted to be once you got in that position.
It's so good.
Right? I mean, I've had a life in in the golf industry, creating this image of who I wanted to be as a general manager. And I can't remember the last time I took a step back to look at that and try and compare who am I today versus the general manager I wanted to be when I was checking people in 5 days a week, you know, 365 days a year, what it felt like back then, right? So, no, yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up because that was powerful. And I feel like I've been able to walk into this place and slow down and slow down a lot more and realize that it's okay to be comfortable and find patience in that gap between where you currently are and what your performance might be top of the line.
Yeah.
Just be the best that you can possibly be today and really more focus on loving my facility for what I can provide in the month of June versus maybe how good I want it to be or how good it could be.
Yeah. And you know, the leadership learning there is vast. Going, you know, growth, personal growth is small, big, meaning like it's small and small and small. Then suddenly you look back and you go, whoa, I've grown a lot. But it's only in those moments behind the desk that you go, I got to remember where I came from to know how much I've actually grown.
That's so true. And I think that my stress, you know, we talk about June being a little bit stressful for me. It's because I want so much for this place. And I feel like we are all so good and so capable of finding that growth.
Yes.
But it's just not the time of the year for that.
Yeah.
Right. It's just not the time of the year for that. And it's perfectly okay to be in that position.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hope every leader has an opportunity to take a deep breath and just look back and go, I've come a long way. I've come much farther than I give myself credit for. And, these types of things to remember where you came from, you know, it's a vendetta. It's a personal challenge, I think, to have those moments of clarity somehow. Do what you can, fight for it. You know, I have the opportunity to go back to Wyoming this weekend and I'm going to have that moment to go, man, I remember young Alex and what he used to dream of. And, you know, maybe, you know, I'm not doing what I thought I would do, but I've grown, you know, I'm a better husband. I'm a better person. I'm a better leader. And, you know, it's only in those moments that you get the opportunity to.
Yeah. And one thing that we are so happy to be talking about is we're having conversations about life and our personal feelings and our impatience in wanting to be better leaders, better husbands, better fathers. And we're talking about all these things because you and I play the game of golf together.
Yeah, come on.
Because we run a golf course, right? So, no, it's so amazing that we have this connection over life and feeling and trying to love the people around of us through the game of golf by leading a golf course.
That's a between the swings moment to the core right there, you know? I wanted to talk a little bit about, we talked about transition in Bermuda and me and you were riffing a little bit over text during the US Open at Pinehurst because Pinehurst was getting some criticism from course conditions and it came from mainly a group of uneducated golfers that don't know much about one Bermuda grass at that time. And any agronomist would go, these course conditions are awesome, right? Even the golfers are saying that's tough course conditions, but it's exactly how it's supposed to be. But the color was a bit off. And it's interesting because we're in a similar season here with Bermuda growth coming in, brown areas that hopefully will grow in with a little bit more humidity, some watering. But you know what were you thinking when you were watching the US Open at Pinehurst, seeing some criticism that was kind of coming from the Instagram comments, all this stuff?
I felt so bad for Pinehurst. I felt so bad for Pinehurst. I love Pinehurst. There's a difference in setting up your golf course to be the lushest, most appealing property possible and setting up the ultimate test and challenge for the game of golf.
Yeah.
And that's what the US Open is. I think the US Open broadcast does a very good job of explaining that these conditions are set up to be some of the most difficult, if not the most difficult tournament of the year. Less than 10 people finish under par, right?
Totally.
On average at the US Open. And in order to achieve those conditions, it's not going to be the healthiest, lushest grass out there, right? Bermuda grass, in order for it to have this lush, vibrant color, is going to have a ton of moisture.
Yep.
You're right. Just either in the soil, in the air, it is humid, it's wet. There's a lot of water going on. The U.S. Open is firm and fast, right? Where your golf ball lands versus where it ends up, they want it to be a large difference. There's a large distance. There's not supposed to be golf balls landing and stopping in one spot. That's too easy for the U.S. Open. And in order to accomplish that, you have to remove a lot of moisture, right? So they are just applying enough water for the grass to look acceptable. So by Thursday, when everyone's playing on the first round, I'm sure people weren't noticing much.
Not much.
But by Sunday afternoon, every place that the crowd had been standing or walking across fairways, it looked almost completely dormant Bermuda in those areas. And a lot of these greens were slick and shiny with a sheen on them that you could just tell there's not a lot of moisture. They are firm, fast, and dry. I mean, there's a measurement that we use in the game of golf to decide or determine how fast green speeds are. Mm-hmm. It's called a stimp meter. Right. So it's a device that looks kind of like a yardstick where you'll roll a ball onto the putting surface on a flat lie, and how far it rolls out in feet is how fast those green speeds are. A common golfer is going to play on courses that are 9, 10, 11 feet on the stimp meter. These were like at 14, maybe even 14 and a half.
Insane.
And PGA Tour is likely in the 12s, 13, 13 and a half. So to get to 14, it would be interesting for you and I to have a conversation with our superintendent and ask him, what would you have to do to Superstition Springs to get 14 on the stimp meter? And I feel like his response would be, I'd be able to get you 14, but you may not have greens the month after that, because they are that close to dying, or they're that close to being forced into dormancy. Or that dry that you would not be able to run a golf course on these conditions for 12 months out of the year, let alone 2, 3, 4, 5 months out of the year.
Totally.
So the difficulty that they are trying to achieve is directly causing the visually appealing nature of the golf course to deteriorate.
Yeah.
And someone who's used to seeing Augusta National be one of the most difficult golf courses in the world, but absolutely pristine, There's room to ask a lot of questions and not understand why the golf course would look the way that it is.
Yeah.
The one thing that I love the heck out of Pinehurst for, that I want everybody to understand, is in the last 20 years, they're trying to get that golf course to be the most natural piece of North Carolina as possible. Mm-hmm. Right. So they are removing all of these acreage of grass over the last 20 years to get it back to a more natural state. So I'd encourage you, if you're a golf nerd out there and you're listening to this, look at Pinehurst number 2 photos from the 80s and now, and you're going to see this approach of trying to get it from a golf course that looks like a lot of maintained, perfectly straight, manicured grass to more of meandering fairways with waste areas.
Yeah.
We learned
desert
there's
areas.
No bunkers on that golf course. It's all waste area, natural area. So ground your club, take practice swings, all that. It is such a unique intention for a golf course to try and abandon this idea of being a super manicured, perfect golf course and try and get it more to this natural landscape where you mold this fairway into a natural waste area.
Yeah, and
it's a really cool look.
And it's water conservation too.
As soon as they
cut out all this turf and just put natural areas, they could, you know, stop watering those areas. It's going to be a natural waste area. So it helps with that whole initiative and that whole process that every golf course is going through as well.
Definitely. Definitely. So Pinehurst has a major intention on the sustainability of their grounds. And I think that could also be one of the reasons why we're not seeing it be this Augusta National type property, right? Yeah. Because Augusta National is one of a kind. It does take an unbelievable, likely unrealistic amount of money to get the golf course to look
exactly
that way. And we don't need hundreds of golf courses spending that kind of intention to make them look that way. Right.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really fun watching that, riffing about that, learning a lot as well, about, you know, turf reduction and that stuff. So definitely check it out. And then coming from Pinehurst, we had a LIV tournament this weekend, and then of course Scotty Scheffler ended up winning the Travelers, which was I'm a big Tom Kim fan, so I was bummed to see Tom Kim because Full Swing season 2 made me freaking love the dude. Just a young golfer out there grinding. People make fun of him because he fell in the water that one day, and you know, I was hoping that he'd went stick it out, but you can't help but love kind of to see Scotty as well.
Tom Kim is everyone's younger brother on the PGA Tour, right? Everyone loves him, wants to see him succeed. Scotty Scheffler is, wow. I think he's chiseling his face on the Mount Rushmore of golfers, or very, very hard in trying to do so.
He is. I mean, the comparisons he's getting, but between all these, I see all these graphics now. Only so many people have had this many in this year, and he's up there with Tiger Woods and
six wins in a year, ranked the number one golfer in the world.
Hasn't missed a cut at a major, you know. Come on. It's really stinking cool, especially, you know, him going to jail, the drama, you know, all of this stuff.
Yeah.
It's really stinking funny.
Yeah, so. No, it's Scotty Scheffler is playing fantastic. One thing that I noticed I'm just so thankful for is some of the first people to like meet Tom Kim after the playoff and like give him love and support. Did you see who that was? It was Scotty Scheffler's family.
Was it his family?
His wife, his mom, his dad saying, we're so sorry, Scotty had to beat you because we love you so much. You are an amazing golfer. We wanted you to win this, but we're just a little bit happier that our guy did.
Yeah.
But it was really cool to see, you know, Tom and Scotty go head to head. And here's Scotty's family going over to Tom and saying,
congrats.
We love you. Congrats on the second place finish. Keep doing you.
Yeah. He had to hit it like a 6 to 8 foot putt there at the end to force a playoff. Mm-hmm. And I have never seen, because Tom Kim is, you know, seemingly this like, has a smile on his face. He's like, just happy. He's like, I'm here for fun. You know, Full Swing painted him as this guy that's like, I don't know where I'm going. I'm just looking for food, you know, like going into places he shouldn't be at the Masters. And then here he was, like, he made this putt and I saw this competitive side to him. He like fist pumped and him and his caddy had a moment. And I was like, this was really cool. Like he's growing up in the game of golf. And I hope I get to see Tom Kim for a long time to come, continue to grind it out.
There's something that clicks in people on the PGA Tour, right? Something clicked in Scotty a year or two ago, and he just reached this level. I really hope that this is that click for Tom.
For Tom.
Like that second place finished, just happened to lose to one of the greatest golfers who ever set foot on planet Earth. I hope this is that click where he starts winning because he's someone the PGA Tour needs him winning more often.
I think so too.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Let's talk about winning the US Open.
Oh yeah. I mean,
you're a LIV guy. You love LIV. You love Bryson. Let's chat. Talk to me about Bryson.
So Bryson, as I'm not going to say anything anyone hasn't already said, because he has won over LIV Golf and that small little fan base that they've accumulated. And somehow he's won back all the PGA fans that deserted him. And the young Bryson, he publicly said, like, I made some mistakes. I was younger and people just, he's grown into this like entertainer, a fun guy to watch. I posted on my Instagram, man of the people, the people's champ.
The
because
people's champ.
That's what he is, dude. Yes. I mean, he even at the end, he really modeled that in staying up late, letting everybody come and touch the trophy, carrying that thing around with him. He always nods the fans now. You know, he really has brought them into who he is as a golfer, as opposed to head down, keeping my like head focused on the game. He really wants the fans to experience it with him. And he did that. And yeah, that's what made me so excited and makes me fall in love with Bryson DeChambeau in 2024.
I'm on the same page. I don't think I was on the Bryson bandwagon when he signed with Liv. I don't know if I really was a fan of him before. I don't think I lost any, you know, fan feelings over him when he left. But I can't think of anyone who chose the situation of their departure to live and turn it into an even better opportunity.
Yeah.
Because what did he do that no one else is doing? I think the negative comments that many naysayers would say about people who go to live is, it's quite clearly a work-life balance.
Yeah. Move. They're selling out.
You're selling out. You're just going to fish Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You're going to play in a handful of tournaments every year. What is it? 15, 18
tournaments?
Which,
let's be honest, like, I think Dustin Johnson kind of said that's kind of why
move.
He did it. You know?
Yeah. You know, the Cam Smith move, the Brooks move. I don't think those guys are out there to work any harder.
Yeah.
That's not Bryson.
It's not.
Bryson is taking the opportunity to almost be more of a YouTube content creator than a professional golfer.
Yeah.
But why? Because the game of golf has provided him the opportunity to make hundreds of millions of dollars. And instead of fish or go hunting or hang out with supermodel wives, he's making golf content to try and celebrate and promote the game of golf.
Boom.
Because of what it's been able to provide him and the person that he has now turned into with the success that he's found, it's amazing. And I don't think we're going to see that anywhere else on Live, or really, I can't think of anybody else in professional sports who takes hundreds of millions of dollars and decides to work harder.
Totally.
It's amazing. It really is.
Me and you talk about this a lot. Like, people can take advantage of the game of golf and use it to their advantage to, you know, grow a fan base or to make money. All makes total sense. No hard feelings. But then there's the other people that want to impact people or impact the game of golf or grow the game of golf. Why? For whatever reason, because they love it, because they've experienced something through it. And Bryson has kind of made that known that he wants to grow the game of golf both nationally and internationally. And if this win at the US Open allows for him to do that, and him signing for Liv has allowed for, you know, the game of golf to think differently, then he's kind of on board for that. And I'm like, heck yeah, I can get behind that.
It's a big move, and I'm so thankful for Bryson. So yeah, kudos to
it's
him
cool.
and what he's doing. It's cool.
It's really cool. I want to, as we finish up here, let's talk about some Between the Swings moments, or maybe a Between the Swings moment we had this past week before we, before we kind of wrap this stuff up officially, what was it for you, man? What was there a moment this week on the course or off the course that you're like, yeah, this was good?
Yeah, one of the top five greatest shots of my life.
Tell me about it.
Top five greatest shots of my life. It wasn't a hole in one. It had nothing to do with going in the hole, by the way.
Okay.
We're playing a par four, and you are in the foursome in front of
I'm
me.
I'm in front of you.
And
I remember. Oh, this is
your
so good.
Cart is, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 yards from the green.
Yeah.
And
how long is this hole? Hole 18?
360.
360?
Yeah. And so I hit my shot and hear this weird noise. And I couldn't see it after a bounce. And I could tell that it had gone a lot further than I wanted it to. And kind of towards your golf cart. And when I get up there, I'm looking for where this ball is supposed to be.
Oh, yeah.
And you come driving back to me. The golf ball that I hit ends up in golf ball holder in your golf cart.
Dude, you piped it. It was 320 probably in air because we were so close to the green. we hear it hit a cart, and as me and my guy are driving off, we're like, whose ball is that? It's your freaking TP5's proto picks ball in our our golf ball holder, which was so funny.
It was one of the most bizarre things in the world. One time in my life, I've hit a ball that ended up after bouncing off a sprinkler head on the top of my playing competitor's golf cart. I was hitting an approach shot to the green. This person had driven up to the green, bounces off a sprinkler head, and lands on top of the golf cart. This is even better. Not only because your cart is, really position A, where you're just hitting a chip shot up to the green.
Yeah.
A spot that you would never think of hitting your golf ball. But, it ends up in the golf ball holder. And you're like, I don't remember this being here. That's
whose
weird.
Ball is this?
Like, oh, now that I think about it, I heard a loud noise. Yeah. That must have been a tee shot.
It was one of those moments. We've all been there. Like, are they in reach? I can't hit it that far. And then lo and behold, you hit it perfectly. It's going right for the core, and it's like, it was one of those moments.
Yeah, I think someone else was either swinging my golf club that day or someone juiced up my driver. Because it was going like 20 or 30 yards further than it was supposed to.
Call it the ripstick. Call it just playing golf a lot. Call it Kyle Jones of Young is now entered into the, post 30-year-old body of Kyle Jones. But you are driving it like a maniac.
Dog. I don't know. It was good. We're referring to Superstition's in-house golf tournament. We do a 4-person scramble every single month. And I got out there with some family members, and I think we normally hang out around the 6, 7, 8 under par mark, and we took it deep. We got to 11 under par with myself and my two aunts. So we had a lot of fun with the long ball that day, and they were just draining putts from everywhere. So
it's fun.
Some between the swing moments from everybody between the swings and in the golf carts.
Yeah, mine was. We have a golf professional here who has been striving for a specific position and trying to move himself up in the golf industry. And we were lucky enough to be able to work at a facility, and some other staff transition happened that we could offer him a role. So we did. I don't think I even told you this moment. You were on vacation, and our regional VP, aka your boss, mm-hmm. was here, and he was just working from the office today. And, we were rubbing shoulders and all this sort of stuff. And Steph walks around the corner, and our boss, his name is Chilo. He stopped him. He put his hand on his shoulder and goes, "Steph, congrats. You deserve it." Mm-hmm. And for Steph, teary eyed really quick, whoa, I think I do deserve this, and it was a moment, and I just witnessed it. I just sat back, and then I just turned around and walked off, and I was walking back to my office. I was like, I think that was a pretty big moment right there. Mm. So that was a between the swings moment, between rounds of golf. Good moment to see a friend, fellow member of our facility get a nice little pat on the back from someone higher up in the corporate world.
It's why we do what we do, man.
That's right.
That's why we do what we do. You reminded me this week in a moment of stress and frustration that, you are quite clearly a person who leads people over product, and how our people feel because they work for us, or maybe as a result of because of them working for us. That's it, man. That's why we do what we do. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, let's conclude it there, man. Good run. Episode 10 will be around the corner. But again, those of you listening in, thank you so much. Remember to embrace the moments.
Yeah. Embrace the moments. Just play golf.
We love you.